Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice. I want to welcome everyone to a great weekend, a happy Memorial Day. Hope those of you that are out having a good time traveling or being safe, barbecuing and doing all those things. Today, we'll go through some snippets from some of the previous shows, throw some music to honor our military in the middle there, and just have a good time. So join us today on the Man's Voice. This is a mostly pre-recorded show, so let's...
Okay, we're streaming on YouTube right now, so you have to be aware of that.
As we go in and listen to some of those shows that were recorded before, and some snippets. Here we go.
It's made laws to come and take your kids, and then they made laws you cannot hit the kids, and then they made laws you can't touch the kids. Somehow, there was a disconnect. I think it happened to us before we knew what happened, but now we don't know what to do about it.
You think, gentlemen, substituting material things, more than our time and our attention to our kids had a role in it?
That's it right there.
Yeah, you know, you always hear, I want my kids to have more than me. That I had, but we also failed to give them what we did have, and that's love, discipline, a sense of pride. I don't care where you go, those things are key to a successful person.
Yes, but I also think we're confused and we don't know where that line is. We don't know where that line is anymore.
What line, David?
What is it that I can do with my child that disciplines them? Because basically, whatever that is, all the child got to do is go to school and tell the teacher that you did that and you're in trouble and you might go to jail and lose your child. So we don't know where discipline line is. Men don't know where that love line is, because we've been told hugging and kissing your kid and all that is not supposed to happen anymore. So we don't know where that line is.
As I mentioned last week, my house is a dictatorship. That's where the line is drawn at. My kids know that I will discipline them. And if they don't tell anybody else, then they're going to live with this.
But so we don't have a lot of you. We need a lot of you.
I agree with what Harold said in a way, because my slant on it would be this, that if you think you're doing good parenting, I'm not worrying about a line. I'm not worrying whether I'm stepping over a line. I'm worried about, am I teaching and giving my kids the right lessons? I'm not worried about who's going to think about it. Now, you know, I think generally good parents think that way. They don't worry about, you know, am I doing this right or doing that, or who's going to call the authorities on me? At least I don't think we're there yet. Heaven help us if we are.
I think we're more seedling. I think a new 19, 20, 21-year-old, 25, up to 30, don't know that.
Really?
I think because when you see people in the news and the paper and pictures, that's who's getting into a lot of trouble. Not that they're doing anything wrong. I mean, there was a time when if you didn't do right, whatever it was that was near closest to your parents, they picked it up and threw it at you. Can't do that anymore. And so I think, and I think our young kids are really trying hard. Don't know where that line is. We don't. We in our age bracket were raised that way, and I think the transition happened right where the kids are 20, 25 are right now, that they're the ones who learn to dial 911 if your parents talk to you bad or touch you. And now they don't know how to raise their kids. Because we as in our age bracket will tell them, well, go space your kids. And you look at them and they look at you like, I can't do that. That actually happened.
David, hey, David, you know what? I had a friend of mine that his parents began to spank him,
right,
or chastise him physically. The police came.
Right.
And the father said, okay, you raise him. So they took him away, and the kid finally realized he had it real good.
Mm.
He had it real good. See, my dad said, spare the rod, spoil the child. He said, I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out. And I believed it. I believed it. You know, although the same father had a problem with saying, I love you, I would say, hey, Dad, I love you. He would say, me too. It couldn't come out of his mouth because his dad had never told him that. In fact, he ran away from home when he was 15. So he didn't know love. And a lot of fathers didn't get the love, so they can't teach their children how to love. And now I'm making a point to tell my kids and my children, hey, I love you, but this is what I expect of you.
I do as well, Don. Matter of fact, I've got a 35-year-old daughter and a 31-year-old son, and I hug them and, you know, talk to them about, and when they do something that I think is wrong, of course, they're adults now, I will advise. I don't tell them anything other than, here's my advice, you can take it or leave it, but I always make sure that they understand at the end of the conversation or the end of the day that the love is still there, and I show that in physical and mental ways as well.
Yeah, it's important. All right, Bruce, I know you had a couple of. Go ahead, Harold.
I just want to figure a couple things. I want bad parenting now, and some bad parenting in the past. The reason why we're in the situation we're in, parents, you're right, have less control. A part of the control problem is parents themselves abusing children from at least the perspective of the government or people that are in that industry of childcare. And part of the problem is that the parents have not found a proper location to exercise their powers that they should have in regard to their children. So we've got children looking at being numbed by video games or violent video games, et cetera, et cetera. Pervasive, sit down and play the video games. We've got now video parties where young adults go to and stay the whole week or weekend and play these different warrior games. So I think that's contributing to the situation that we have in our society, where we have people that are undisciplined, disrespectful of others. That's my commentary.
All right. What, did we answer your question, Bruce?
I think so. I think it's a multitude of things. I think you touched on most of it. It still comes back to the, if you really want to simplify it, and I think you guys agreed with what I was thinking, is parental time with your children, whether they're young, in between, or adults even, there's no substitute for it. There just isn't. And as we become more of a who's got what kind of material stuff. We let that slide. Where our parents may have been almost domineering in that regard, we didn't come out all that bad. Now that we're doing less and less and less of that, I really worry about the fact that it's kind of like we're letting the ships just flow away from the dock without any rudder. And our parents have always been the rudder to help them, at least until they know how to steer the boat. And that's scary. I think that's scary to me.
You know, I'm looking at the picture I'm seeing on the screen, and I'm looking at a mature, successful picture of men. I think we missed a generation. Our generation was reared the right way. Then we were so wrapped up in being successful, making money, providing for our family, and that generation that is under us missed it because they didn't get a lot of attention and love. They got materialistic things.
Yeah.
Because we wanted them to have more than what we had.
They thought that was better.
We thought that was better. My kids won't suffer. They're not going to go what I had to go through. That type of attitude. And then we got babies raising babies. Babies raising babies. That generation after us had babies, and now we got grandkids. Babies raising babies. And they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. And then now they're saying, I'm 21. I'm an adult. Well, how do you parent an adult? You can't.
They don't have skills, Don. And it's partly the way I always disarm people that you might be having a conversation with, as I do. I take part of that blame. As you said, as you pointed out, our generation was supposed to do in part what our parents did for us. And we thought all along, since America measures success by money and material things, that was it. That was the end all. It's not. They found out that it's a small part of it. That can be a reward, but that doesn't mold the person.
You know, I hear you, and I think the first thought that came to my mind was something that I never thought about before was, we spent a lot of time in our generation making sure that we were the middle class. We wanted to be solid in our skill to make sure that our families were solidly at a higher level than possibly we grew up. So we were working solidly on establishing ourselves as middle class, and we worked all the time. And we spent weekends, and that's when time changed from a 40-hour work week to exempt employee, you're basically work when I tell you to work.
Exactly.
And you don't get any time off, and no, you can't have vacation, and no, you don't have enough money to go to the Bahamas with your kids. But we did it. We did the best we could, you know, to make it. And I think you're right. We probably did lose a generation of kids who just didn't get that relationship.
And I go back to what Don said. We let the video games raise our kids now. Many times we'll say, okay, go play. For us, go play was going outside, dealing with other people. Then we got to a stage where now it's go in your room, play your video games, and I'll call you when I meet you. That's how the younger generation is raising kids now.
Right.
Because they have so many things in their rooms. When we were growing up, you barely had a TV in the whole house.
That's right. And we had to go outside. But right now, you tell a kid you're taking away his video game or his phone, and you would think they're on drugs. They would have a panic attack. One of the funniest things on YouTube I saw was a man got fed up. So he took all his son's his video game and about 50 games, boom on the grass, and started up his lawnmower. The little boy had a heart attack. He was thinking that he was actually going to have to go to the hospital when that man actually ran over all of his stuff. Yes.
He was an adult. And you thought he was a six-year-old child that we told Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy was not real.
Right. Right.
So how do we, gentlemen, we know we're not going to, in large parts, we're not going to change the electronic generation. It's here. It's going to continue to occupy a lot of our children's and the younger generation's time, whether we like it or not. So how do we as more mature adults, more mature in age, how do we help them connect with humans? I have physically seen young adults get physically nervous for talking to each other versus texting or email, talking on their phone. Face-to-face conversations like we're having now is unnerving to them. And that is, to me, that is really a bad situation. We've really got to turn that around.
You're right, Bruce. You know, we're in a generation now where that generation that we're talking about will go in the same room and they'll cut as a death paper. My daughter told me, she said, "Dad, I don't talk on the phone, I text." Well, I talk on the phone. I talk to you face to face. Now it's so easy to hide behind and let Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, social media. It's easy to hide between the true feeling with those type of devices. And the thing is, what's happened to the things of, hey, listen down and talk?
They're gone.
I think to answer, Bruce, we missed that generation. We got to start right now with our younger grandchildren and their children, and then they will see and pick up. That's the only thing I think.
I agree, Dan.
Bruce, one of the things that I do with my kids, if there's something that happened at church, I make them get up and read a scripture or introduce something. Because when they get out to the real world, when they have to interview, they will not know how to speak. I took my oldest to a recruitment at Baylor University, and the admissions counselor said that you should see some of the applications that come in. The wording is text abbreviations.
Mm. Yeah.
And he said, we have to tell these kids, do not write like you text. And I tell my kids all the time, and that's what's going to start with us mentoring these kids or volunteering with these kids and showing them the art of conversation, showing them how to interact in an interview. My daughter had a job interview, and I sat down and I told her, and I interviewed for my company. And I gave her questions I would give some of them. And I need you to answer to me face to face. I'll never forget, my son was about 11 years old. We went to the state capital of Texas, and Governor Rick Perry walked in the room, and, you know, young men, I don't care if you're white, black, brown, whatever, young men have a tendency, when they introduce themselves, have their heads down. And Rick Perry told my son, don't ever put your hand down again when you're talking to anybody. And my son remembered that to this day, and I tried telling him before, speak loud, speak power, hold your head up. Those are the conversation pieces that we're missing with our young people.
Harold, I couldn't agree with you more. And you made me think of something when you were saying that. To find a way that is attractive to our younger adults or our youth and get into this conversation mode, one-on-one or multiple, face-to-face conversation, wouldn't it be nice if we could create, again, debate teams and debating activity where it could be subjects where that are more in our age group versus theirs and vice versa, where you have to think out, prepare, talk directly to each other and interact. I mean, something that would be of interest to them as well as a teaching tool. I mean, we've got to think of creative ways, I think, to get them engaged again, because they're not going to do it on their own.
we were supposed to taught that to them.
One of the problems I have with them since the conversation is that, with due respect, I think we're being a little too basic. Because, you know, when I grew up, and I may be older than all of you, children would be seen and not heard, okay? And so right there starts the problem of being able to look someone else in the eye while you communicate with them. And I'm not so sure how tolerant the adult population is towards the minor population and listening to their opinions. So I think we may ourselves be part of, you know, and I think we are part of the problem as to why children are not spending more time communicating. Part of it being that we allow them to do what they're doing, and the other part is that we may not want to communicate with them. I believe that's the way it was in my house. And that quote that I gave you was quoted many times in my house. So I didn't advise mine at this. But that was the quote. And that was the quote in my community of people.
Yeah, you know, actually, I heard that a lot when I was growing up. But I'm trying to think how that translated into today's time.
If you had a difference of opinion, I quite often regularly have a difference of opinion than what my parents had. And part of that, the reason why I had a difference of opinion was because the education that I was receiving was contrary, in a lot of cases, to what my parents were espousing. All right, so I think there's conflict in this because in my situation, I was being told in the home that you shouldn't really have to worry about crying because crying is not going to carry you very far in the society we live in because the society is fair. And at school, you're being taught to do the best you can because that'll be successful. So I think we're glossing over that is built-in conflict that I think exists right today in our community. And it existed in the time that I was growing up.
Okay. Any thoughts, anybody? I want to take that as a segue because there's another piece that I would like to talk about, and it has to do with incarceration of our young people today. And what brought that to my attention was the president or the federal government releasing, 600 or 6,000 or something people out of jail for low-end crimes. I think a lot of our young men and women are incarcerated for things that back in 10 years ago, having a ounce of marijuana, or I don't know what an ounce is, having a joint, I guess I would say, was illegal. Now, they're selling it over the counter for medical reasons. So, we were putting him in jail for 10 years, 20 years, for having a joint, or possibly you were arguing with the police officer or fighting with the police officer. So you got 50 years or those kinds of things that were ridiculous. So a lot of our young people are stuck in jails and prisons. So my conversation, my train of thought or what I want to get from you guys is, where do you think raising or putting, because a lot of these jails now, and they're coming up with putting, I've noticed a lot of judges going to jail because they are getting money from these private jails to put people into these jails. And so it doesn't take much now to get a person, and we got a lot of prosecutors whose job it is to go to jail these days is not if you've done the crime, it is who's the best attorney, which one is the better presenter based on the judge's opinion. And it's not really based on any law. So I just want to open that up and get your comments on that. What do you think of this? I see your thoughts are on your head are running around.
Yeah.
I don't know. Of course, it's bad to see our youth penalized in jail, no matter what the situation is. I think we need that. I think we need the difference between right and wrong. And once you become an adult, you're responsible for, you know, for the most part, your own actions. But to your point, we learn as we go along that just incarceration or when our kids were little, locking them in, telling them to go to their room or whatever, doesn't really solve the problem. It might make certain people feel better that, look, by George, that person did wrong and he or she's going to pay it. But it really doesn't solve the problem. I think we have to come up with better ways to, again, show those. For example, if someone's in a jail, I know this might be a little idealistic, but what better opportunity to take an opportunity to teach? This person you have all their attention. They're not going anywhere. They can't do anything. Why not take that opportunity to really find ways to bring in positive role models of all types and ages to help make that connection again? I mean, they're hungry for, they don't want to sit around in a yard or a cell all day long. They would love this to be active in some way, and we could use that as an opportunity.
You're absolutely right. I, you know, one of the things that I pride myself in my life is being a mentor in the penal system. Once a month, I go into the prisons and jails and have a chance to talk to men, young men that are incarcerated. And we've all made bad choices in life. Let me say that. I know I certainly have. Maybe you guys haven't. You guys have been excellent all your life. Maybe. I don't know. But the only reason why I'm not there is I didn't get caught. I realize that. And incarceration does not equal rehabilitation. They're not there to be rehabilitated. They don't have money to rehabilitate them. They either learn how to be a better thief and not make some of the same mistakes, or they change 360 degrees, like you said, Bruce. It's a paradigm shift. It's a crossroads situation. I'm at the crossroads now. I got to make up my mind. I got to do something. And that's a very important time in a person's life when they're incarcerated. And then I go back to when President Clinton put in the three strikes, you're out law. What that did was it incarcerated a lot of men of color. You go in these prisons, in these jails, and you see a disproportionate amount of African-American men. I see that. Three strikes, you're out. And they lock them up, and they expect them to, okay, stop being a fool when you get out. Stop being a fool. I'm going to lock you up for 10 years, but stop being a fool. So all the money that has been put in America has been put in the penal system. And if you really want to make some money, invest in prisons because it's inflation-proof. Let me say it again. It's inflation-proof.
What do you, Don, what, why don't we, since I've mentored as well, but not in prison, so I have a curious question for you. If you've done that and made observations and feel you helped some and maybe not helped others, but tried, what is the reluctance of the penal system to go out to the public and say, someone like me who enjoys mentoring, and saying, hey, all of you that are out there, would you like to donate your time to come in and talk to some? They don't reach out to the public that has the talent of all shapes and sizes, of all colors and economic levels, to come in and help. They'd be surprised, I think, sometimes on who who would show up and how they would be able to help.
Because of money, they don't want to rehabilitate. They want to keep the money going, keep the money incoming. So they can keep the prisons going. Prison is the largest source of revenue for most states and the federal government.
Prison is big business.
$30 a year per inmate.
Right, and private prison is a bigger business. And private prisons need prisoners to succeed. And the reason, the way they get prisoners is convince officers and judges to convict them, to send them there.
And this even ties into why we have young men being raised by females. You see,
right.
It all ties together because the men have been locked up.
Well, this also for me, and I hate to be a hellion on this thing, but this breeds a disrespect for the home total system. Okay, if you feel that you're being locked up because you're just unlucky, and like you pointed out, and I'm one of those people that was lucky, and you figure the system is not right, all right? And how can you ever respect the system, and how can you ever grow up to be a full productive citizen? So right now, this $30,000 a year we're spending is where we want to put our money, and we want to put our monies into our business industry in this country. We don't do manufacturing except we're in the prison industry. That's where we decided to put our money in the private industry and warehousing people. These people that are being warehoused are in the prison because they don't have the respect. They're not getting the education while they're in the prison, and we're kind of doing a two-faced operation. So I think we are destined for bad times, multiplied by what we have currently today. And I think until we reduce our prisons with the numbers of people in there, and we as adults teach and preach what we teach and walk the walk, we're going to continue to have problems with managing our youth.
And you know, we got some inmates coming home, I think, next month or month after next. I forgot how many, but the president's going to.
6,000, right? 6,000?
6,000. And the majority of them are non-violent offenders, and a lot of them are drug related, a pound of marijuana. Well, guess what? Here in Florida, they're selling it. They're making money off of it. Michigan, there are stores where you can go and buy it. And these people have been locked up for selling marijuana. Like you said, we're talking out of both sides of our neck.
But they're being locked up without any education or anything to advance them. So when they get out, they'll be good citizens. I do know that they make promises to them. You know, we're going to have the school, and then they pay for an instructor for one semester, but they have no credentials when they get out. No one will hire them. They can't vote. And, you know, what do they do? You know, that you're taking a person and putting them in the middle of the desert and saying, survive. Or don't go back to your same bad habits.
There's a movement afoot to Men's Warehouse is one of the guys, and there's a few others. I think the Koch brothers are another group that basically don't ask in the job application whether you've been incarcerated in the past. All right, so that's one of the things we're going to have to do, because we can't have these millions of people. We have the highest incarceration rate of developed countries in the world. We are multiple times larger population of incarcerated people than any country in the world. And that's because we want your right to lock you up policy. And that costs our taxpayers more money to incarcerate an individual than it does to provide subsidies and welfare. Because this is a lifelong thing for some of these people. And like you said, $30,000 a head. And it's going to get more expensive. And it gets more expensive when you bring the people back into society and they're not equipped to be successful in society. So for me, what we've got to do is we've got to be honest players. Like you pointed out, some of us have already been down that same road, like the president, who just were not incarcerated because they weren't caught or because they weren't the people that were being looked for and not that they committed to live in the neighborhoods that they wanted to, you know, to clean up. So I think that we've got to get their respect. We've got to get the youth respect. We also have to stand in our proper roles as parents. And I think to be a parent, we cannot be divided. We can't say one thing and do something different. And that's what I saw growing up as a child. I saw being told one thing and something else actually going on. So I think you've got to be the example. I find that in all my walks of life, military, whatever, if people are watching you, what you say and what you do. If you want them to respect society, you want them to respect the laws, then we have to be those examples.
I agree, Frank, especially the little ones. When we get our first chance to teach our youth, they're a recorder. They record everything. And they're recording. They're not recording your voice. They're recording your action. They're watching what you're doing. So I couldn't agree with you more. But we've got to figure out ways, don't we, to break this cycle that once someone gets incarcerated, no matter who they are, they've got a label around their neck. And even if they do their time, they come out with this label, this brand on their neck. And with few exceptions, which hopefully are going to grow more and more, they're not given an honest chance afterwards. I mean, they're done. And like you say, ignoring those thousands and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people in our country is a crime in and of itself. We need to find a way to kind of remove that label. And as you pointed out, I've seen a few others where they've said, you know what, some of my best workers are these people that come out and get a second chance. And that's great.
You know, Bruce,
and I think that's what's needed. The second chance is what's needed. A lot of these guys are disenfranchised, and they don't have anywhere to go. When we have companies willing to give them that second chance, I can see crime going down. I can see reincarceration going down, but they need a second chance, but not necessarily they will get it.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think that the President of the United States needs to have another Secretary of Second Chance. There needs to be, from the top down, the Second Chance movement or something like that. Because the number of people they put in, and so that segues into another point. What percentage do you think police departments are corrupt nationally?
I want to listen first.
I'm asking this question being an ex-police officer, and I can tell you some stories. So I'm going to ask.
I would go with the old rule of 80-20.
80 corrupt, 20 good, or 80 good, 20 corrupt?
I would say majority, they stick with each other. They all do the racist, and they all have this quota that they're reaching. But I'd say 80% of them are corrupt, but out of that 80, a lot more go above and beyond the corruption in some of them.
Gerald, if you feel that many of them are corrupt, then that figure sets me back in my chair. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It just, that shocks me. So I got to ask the question, what is your definition of corrupt?
Where illegal stops, illegal profiling, unjust tickets, and coming from Chicago and Dallas, I read an article the other day from the Chicago Tribune where almost 60,000 people were held in a warehouse over a certain amount of time because the Chicago police did not put them on the books. They just took them to this warehouse and interrogated them about different things.
Let me just say, I passed something on the net from one of the southern states. I think it's Alabama or Mississippi. There's a judge there. He's elected. He's been a judge there for many years. been not brought before judge for greater than 9 months. So they've been incarcerated, but they haven't had their day in court. And they will not appoint a lawyer to defend these people until they get their first day in court. So they've been sitting for 9 months. Now, the police are doing their investigation, but this person's sitting there without a judge. And the judge just voted on there and said, that's the way I do my business. Okay, well, a lot of people believe that you're guilty, but they're accused, the judge is saying, which you're guilty until you're proven innocent. So I would say this right here. I know that at minimum it's a 90-10 ratio in every police department. There's a 10% group of people that are corrupt, and you can expect them to be corrupt. And the reason why I will say that is because, one, you've got to come in with so many tickets. You know, I mean, there's a guy that walks us out in the hall and says, hey, you know, we haven't got as many tickets this week. We already know in Missouri that that's what was happening there. They were actually paying for their expenses through ticketing the black population there because their tax rate wasn't high. Okay? And so that's already come out. And I think that we know that just about every situation, whether it be the military or whatever, we've got 10% of the population that's doing things different than what they should be doing things, either because they haven't got the education or they haven't got the word. But my observation long-term from a child up to the day, up to the present times, I'm not against the police force. I respect the police. I waved at one this morning that was helping the traffic flow coming out from our church. But I do believe that if they're put into a bind, they're going to try to cover it up in a lot of these cases.
But Frank, you're saying 10%, right?
Yes. Yes.
And Harold, did I hear you right? You said 80% or 20?
80-20, you said.
80.
But the 80 was good or bad?
Bad.
Yeah, so it's just the opposite of what you're saying.
Well, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. That,
I want to believe, I'll go next. I want to believe more towards Frank's leaning that it's, yes, every organization, including the police department, have their bad apples or ones that are close to expiration date. But and you're always going to have individual situations where maybe they have a speed trap, maybe they don't. As much as I don't like that, I don't see that kind of thing as corrupt. But let me use my definition and my percentages, ones that, you know, don't give you the benefit of the doubt and maybe bend the rules a little more than they should. Having said that, I would tend to agree that it's 90-10 with the problem, or 15%, no more than that. I mean, that's my take.
Let me tell you what I think. I think that if you have a elderly police force from the top, then your bottom is corrupt. And let me tell you why I say that. Back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, they didn't have these rules. They were very corrupt. The newer officers are less corrupt because they have been out mixing and they understand. I think they're getting a lot better. But what I find is older officers who believe in throwing you around and beating you up and doing all that, a young officer cannot get through his police department because he has to go riding with these officers. And these officers report on his caliber, his situation, or his advancement. He will not be a police officer if the older officer says, oh, he won't make it because he's too soft. So they're hard on purpose. So if you have a large older officers, I would say 50% corrupt because they're used, that's how they play the game. They don't know any better. And a young officer can't get through that to be an officer if the older officers don't approve of him. The younger the officer, I think to me, if with those departments that I see that have younger officers that are captains and things, they are a little better, and I would give them the 90-10. But right now, I would say it's about 50-50. And in these smaller cities where they've been there for 20, 30, 40 years, they are bad. I would say they're the worst.
And that's how the Chicago Police Department was. there was an old regime in the Chicago Police Force that wrote their careers on false applications, false tickets, false everything, and the entire, I would say, 80% of the Chicago Police Department was corrupt.
David, I kind of agree with you. When I was going to say 50-50 also. And I use the analogy of power and authority. You know, if you have them that's got both of them, I really don't trust them.
You know, as being a police officer, I would say that is like being God in your area. You can go into the area that you're assigned and do anything you want. You can go in the store and take cigarettes and coffee and thing and say, I'm taking these, and the guy in the store will say, okay, because he wants your protection in that store. The more you see a police officer, the less people will rob your store. So they give away that free stuff. You can go to someone's house and beat them up and say, this is my area, and who are you going to tell? You know? So you're like little gods to these communities. Given that power, a lot of officers cannot handle it. I mean, you know, like, I can go and beat you up, but who cares? I remember my first time in a car with my officer, and he said, I want to tell you something. The only reason I'm a police officer in the inner city is so I can kick people's ass, because I like to beat people up, and that's the only reason I'm over here, and I don't give a shit what you say. I'm kicking ass. That's what he told me the first day on the job. And I was like, wow.
That's exactly why I said power and authority. I have power to use this,
yes.
And I have authority to use this.
And I can put you in jail, and you can't do nothing about it.
Well, that's the first thing I learned from the police department about 20 years ago is that's called mind over matter. I don't mind, and you don't matter. All right? And UVA area last year, there was a guy who was a scholar at the school who was Afro-American, who was the president of the class, who evidently was trying to get into a bar. He's underage. And the Alcohol and Beverage Control Board basically beat the stuff out of him, scarred him up, you know, blood all over the place. And so what is, you know, there's been on the governor's, Terry McAuliffe, I think he fired those guys. Alcohol withdrew the charges on the kid because they had some trumped up charges on the kid. The kid is now suing them. But the university, everybody's up in arms about this because there was no reason for a kid to try to get in the bar who was beaten.
And you're listening to The Man's Voice. Once again, it's the Memorial Day review where we're going back and listening to excerpts from shows from behind or the past. Hoping you're having a good time, hoping you're listening and enjoying the show with us. Let us continue. If you have any comments, you can always call me at 646-668-8740 with any comments on what you're hearing. But once again, that's the panel discussing in a previous taped conversation about things that we thought were important at that time. Let's continue on.
It's believed that this happened because the kid was black and the police felt law enforcement. I think they've been fired, terminated. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. You know, I know the chief of police for our town. I think he's a good guy. I'm holding in Virginia Beach. Jilly do a pretty good job, except for when it came to handling black students. We have a bad reputation for handling black students from colleges. They come into our area. But I think the chief is trying to make a difference by now sending his police officers out to the homes of the neighborhoods with the lower incomes. And we don't have a lot of them, but we do have some. And I think that's going to make a difference as far as the police officers becoming better acquainted with the public that they're supposed to be serving. But yeah.
Wait.
The last point I'd like to make is the respect part. Is that if you don't respect the police, you know, how can we expect that people, our children that are not incarcerated, as well as our children that are incarcerated, to do better?
I want to pick up. But I want to pick up with that. And we were on for an hour. We were podcasting, and they cut the podcasting off at 7 o'clock, and we're right after 7 o'clock. And if you want.
Once again, you're listening to The Man's Voice, and what you're listening to is some excerpts from previous shows, hoping that you're having a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. We hope that those of you that are traveling are being safe, and that if you're cooking in the backyard or something, that you're all enjoying a great meal. We'll continue on, but if you have conversations, if you have anything that you would like to comment on, you could call me at 646-668-8740. Let's continue on. We got a few more minutes left for the show today. Hoping that you're having a good time out there. Call me. Let me know what you're doing.
Go to YouTube.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I got the check, man. Saying, don't say that because it might not be there. But we're assuming it's there. But the tech guy, you see him behind. It doesn't help with us trying to sell the package to a national.
And who's talking?
This is Don talking.
All right, Don.
And at first, I was told me to get. At first, I was totally against it. I had to change my belief system because I'm not going to argue.
Sorry.
I'm not going to argue with the Bible.
Correct.
Word in the Bible is true in my life and in my belief system. But I had to also put a but in there. And but means we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So if being homosexual or lesbian is a sin, how is that greater or less or more than lying, cheating, stealing, killing?
You see where you're in, though.
So what I'm saying to you is you have to understand what you believe in. My belief system is in the Bible. That's the B-I-L-E for me. Believer's instructions before leaving earth. So we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So if I'm a homosexual or I'm a lesbian or whatever, that's sin. So who am I to judge? It's an opportunity for me. It's an opportunity to win.
Don, what I would say to that, with all due respect, that the sins that you compare homosexuality to, you know, lying, stealing, cheating, those are all choices. Being gay is not a choice. So I think the Bible is open to interpretation, and that's why a lot of churches around the world are interpreting it differently now to be more inclusive. We're all human beings. We all fall in love. We all have desires, and we're no different from each other. You and I, if we cut our skins open, our blood is the same exact color.
All right, so you're saying to me that being gay is not a choice?
That is correct. That's exactly what I'm saying. And there's lots of studies, actually, more and more studies each day that prove that. So I think, you know, just as with my brothers, I think it's a matter of not having the information and or maybe not even caring to know the information that is out there, the scientific evidence that is stronger and stronger in support of the fact that it is not a choice. People just sometimes are stuck in their ways of thinking, and they don't want to progress and grow. But, you know, it'll come with time. I mean, little by little, countries are changing, including the U.S. I mean, so the fact that now it's legal for two guys or two girls, whatever, to get married in the U.S., that makes it legal. So what does that mean? That for the decades before, Did you understand that? Does everybody understand that argument, or should I restate it?
See, this is Frank. I'm with you on the argument.
Okay. You know, it just doesn't make sense. So to me, what that tells me is that it's been right all along, and now we're just coming to accept that, you know. And the Supreme Court, you know, these are some of the smartest people that we have around. And yes, it was a very close, you know, one vote decision. But, you know, and I think with time, even the most conservative will probably start coming around and understanding that we're all people, you know. I don't want any second life, you know. I just want to be treated equally like every other American. It doesn't make any sense to me that if I get married in New York before it was legal across the entire United States, if I got married in New York, I'm fine. I'm legal. My partner and I are legal, but then we move to Florida and we're not considered legal. We're like, you know, a second class citizen. Where's the justice in that? And it's still part of the USA, you know, still part of the same country. It just bothers me, you know. Again, things are changing. I'm happy to see the change. I would love for my brothers to hop on board someday. And I think little by little, even the majority of the country now sees it differently than they did, say, 15, 20, 30 years.
The tech guy you see him behind me, we've been working on getting it sorted. It's the same thing. It's the same thing that we as African Americans had to go through as well.
I agree. Exactly the same. And I know that the African American community was infuriated for so long because of the injustices. And so I'm glad that you see that it's the same thing, because it is. You have no choice, you know. So if you have no choice, then why should you be treated differently than somebody else?
Well, I'd like to break in. Hold on a second. It's Ms. Marshall. Hello? I got Ms. Marshall in, but obviously it says her microphone.
Hey, David, this is Frank. Can you hear me?
Yes. Is that, I'm getting a lot of noise. Is that, am I getting a lot of strange noises? Maybe Ms. Marshall trying to get in. Frank, there is a lady coming in to ask questions. It shows that she's in, but her audio isn't working. So I guess she's probably trying to work.
What's been happening is that your system has been muting out some of the voices. Based on my computer feedback on my system, it's been going in and out, and it says that the organizer has been muting it. So that may not be the case.
It got really loud. I muted it because it was tearing up everybody's ears. So I kind of muted
okay.
it.
Okay.
Okay. Gotcha. Ms. Marshall. Okay, I got that her microphone doesn't seem to be working. But anyway, sorry, guys. I told you she's there, but now it shows that her microphone isn't working. All right.
She'll probably have to hit her microphone on there because mine was.
Here we go.
Yes.
Ms. Marshall.
Yes, sir.
Welcome. I'm going to let the gentlemen introduce themselves. First, will you introduce yourself?
My name is Christina Marshall.
Tell us a little bit about you, just a short couple of sentences.
I am a professor of social science. I have a degree in sociology as well as a law degree.
Yes. What is that noise? Somebody's. I think that's Frank.
Well, it might be me. I'm going to try to move to a different location. I'll try to. I'm going to call this.
Okay. Mr. Wiggins, want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, you have to change the, you have to change the attitude.
Don Wiggins, Ms. Marshall.
Nice to meet you.
I'm a man of God, first of all. And I'm entrepreneur, podcast speaker. I'll just like that.
All right, Bruce.
My name is Bruce. I am a professional.
You've been listening to The Man's Voice, and we're getting close to the end of the day. It's 7 o'clock. I want to thank you for listening in. Join us again next week when we will be live on the air, 6 o'clock next Sunday, talking about things that we find of interest. And if you have any questions that you would like to join in with us, please do. Also, if you have any comments, call in and let us know what we should be talking about. Again, have a great week.